This is Business Rockstars. I'm Alex Worley. Welcome to the show. I have the owner and CEO of Bird Bakery. Her name is Elizabeth Chambers Hammer. Thanks so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Yes. Now, I know that you've been in this seat quite a bit as a host and journalist. So please share a little bit about your work and entrepreneurial journey that has led to you creating Bird Bakery.
Of course. So I studied journalism in college. I always knew I was going to be an anchor. I knew I always wanted to go into journalism. My first job out of school was Al Gore's network, Current TV. I was an anchor there for 4 years and then went on to do shows on E! And the Speed Channel and local news, like everything you can imagine. And I love my job so much. But about, I guess it was probably 5 years into my career, I had 3 shows that were all canceled within 2 weeks. And I was so frustrated because, as you know, in television, you can do everything in your power to do your job as perfectly as possible. And there are other extenuating circumstances that you have no control over, whether it's ratings, whether it's financing, whatever it is. So I just felt this frustration in the sense that, like, I went from being the busiest person I knew to literally having 3 canceled shows. I always knew I was going to open a bakery. I thought maybe I would be 50 and hosting the Today Show and just do it on the side, which is a really good thing I didn't wait that long because I would have never had the energy. I could not be pulling like 5 all-nighters a week at the age of 50. But yeah, so I just said, I think now's the time. I want to be able to control my destiny. And I was really involved in DECA growing up. I don't know if you're familiar with DECA. It's a business marketing class in high school. And I actually won nationals at DECA when I was a senior in high school. Over 75,000 students. And I basically came up with a business model of creating an environment in a cafe, like Creek Cafe. I went to a school called Cherry Creek High School, where basically the business students are learning practical knowledge in their mm-hmm. cafeteria, basically, instead of hiring people from outside. So I always had this business sense and I always loved business and marketing. So I went on a run and I was like, okay, it's going to be called Bird Bakery. It's going to, at that time, it was 2012. So everything was like hot pink, orange. I felt like so many of the cupcakeries and bakeries that you walked in were just like plastic and bright colors, but I really wanted to have an organic feel that reflected our values in the back, which was like everything from scratch, whole ingredients, basically how I had always baked with my grandmother and my mother. And so it really, I mean, that was the impetus. And we are open 4 months later. It's been the biggest challenge of my entire life. I can still now simultaneously do television as well. But it is truly the most challenging thing I've ever done, including being a mother and everything.
That too. Yeah, yes. You've got lots of things going
but
on.
But no, I mean, it is. They say, you know, the greatest risk equal the greatest rewards. And it has been so rewarding. And we just opened our second location in Dallas.
Congratulations.
Thank you. That's
so exciting. But like you said, obviously being an entrepreneur, much different from being a host, being a journalist. So what to you makes an entrepreneur, a great entrepreneur?
I mean, I always say there are 9 million reasons why you shouldn't do something, and there's that one reason why you should. So a great entrepreneur is a person that keeps focusing on that one reason. They focus on what they want, they focus on their dream, they focus on their vision, and there is nothing that can get in the way of that.
Mm-hmm. I think the hardest part is when you first decide, I'm going to start this business,
yes.
Those first few months where a little bit of imposter syndrome, maybe a lot of of imposter syndrome
yes.
kicks in, a lot of fears associated. Mm-hmm. So did you deal with any of those fears at first?
Oh my gosh. It was like every day. I mean, you know, I think we live in a different time now. I always, like, I think about the fact if I were going to start a bakery maybe 30 years ago or 40 years ago, I would probably be, you know, obviously an avid baker, which I am, but probably have to go work as an apprentice or something mm-hmm. under another bakery yeah. owner to see how they started their company. And we live in a time where information is readily available, but that does not take away the fear and some of the anxiety and the challenges that you face. I mean, even now we've been open over 6 years, 6.5 years, and I'm still facing some of the same challenges we had in the beginning. We're a made from scratch bakery. So in the very beginning, one of my bakers wouldn't show up. And then the decorators would show up at 7, but they had nothing to decorate because the bakers didn't show up. And then we open our doors at 10 and there's nothing in the case.
Oh my goodness.
Like, amazing business model. Not at all. Like, you know, basically I was doing everything from making the sandwiches, making the cupcakes, doing the payroll, staying. I mean, I was basically sleeping there for the first 5 months we were open. I literally like slept at the bakery.
And that's what a lot of entrepreneurs or aspiring entrepreneurs don't understand is all the hats you have to wear in the beginning.
Yes.
It looks so glamorous from the outside.
Yes.
When you do pull it all together and you open those doors and the beautiful baked goods, but yes. what they don't see is all the chaos behind
oh
the scenes
no.
leading up to it.
It's true. I would literally go in the back alley and just hysterically cry for hours. And I'm not a crier. My mom was just like, why are you doing this to yourself? I just don't understand. And I knew that it was my dream and my goal and that the, anything short of fulfilling that was going to be a failure in my mind. And everyone says, oh my gosh, I can't believe how successful you guys are. Did you ever in your a million years imagine that you would be this successful? I'm like, I would have not killed myself the way I did if I didn't think we were going to be. You have to have so much faith in yourself because my own mother was like, just don't do this. I'm like, you know, I mean, you have to be your biggest cheerleader and your biggest support because that's all you have.
So how do you maintain that sense of confidence and belief in yourself?
Look, what the alternative is not doing it. And how many people haven't done it? You know, it just takes you. It takes one person to do it.
So having the right perspective.
Exactly.
About it.
And know that, of course, a million things are going to come up, but you're learning and you're getting stronger along the way. And every single challenge is just preparing you for something in the future. And it's not only preparing you for something in business, preparing you for something in life. Nothing surprises me in life, like nothing. I've seen it all. If I told you stories about like things, like employees and challenges, like there is literally nothing that throws me off because of the challenges I face as an entrepreneur.
What advice would you give yourself that first year if you could go back? What advice would you give your early entrepreneurial self?
That's a really good question. I think the advice I would give myself as an early entrepreneur is knowing that you're setting up a template for future success. So basically, in the beginning, you're kind of finding yourself doing the same things over and over. And the sooner that you set, that you put procedures and policies in place, so you save yourself, what's the definition of insanity, doing the same thing over and over and expecting a different outcome, like just set up sort of yourself for success in the future. So policy and procedure is the biggest thing I learned. And I had to learn that by trial and error. Going into it now, I would have definitely told myself, you know, set those things in place. And whether it's forms, checklists for other people and delegation. Delegation is, I think, the most difficult thing for people to learn. I always tell my management and my staff, I know you're going to do it 100%, but I need you doing other things. So know that I'm okay with 80% of it being done by someone else.
Are there examples of a few tools that you just swear by? Maybe it's apps, software, maybe it's tangible, intangible, a process that you mentioned
yeah.
that you just live by, that you're like, every entrepreneur needs to live by these three things?
Of course, yes. I think the biggest thing is the culture of your company, creating a heart for your business. You know, you care so much. And it's absolutely vital that people feel that all the way down, whether they're a dishwasher or a busboy or a manager or an accountant. I want our accountant to know how incredibly, like what our culture of our company is and what it means to me and the blood, sweat, and tears it got. It's because it's really easy for someone to come in, walk through the door, think that they're clocking in, clocking out, and not know what it took to build this company. And I want everyone to feel part of that journey. So I think like the best advice I can give is make every single employee, every single staff member, every single person on your team feel what you feel in terms of ownership, and maybe do that with incentives, maybe do that with, you know, partial profit participation. But, and obviously that's something that happens much later, like do not give away any profit participation in the beginning. But as you build your team and realize who's there to stay, make them feel invested. And you're only as strong as your least involved employee. And I always say that. The fact of the matter is I have an incredible team. Julie, who's my right hand, she's been with me for 8 years. She runs the company as if it's her own. And she's like a sister to me. She cares so much. So we are in constant communication. Even walking in, she's like, okay, I can tell you're checked out because you're going. She's like, you're going to be on camera. I'll talk to you when I have your full attention. I'm like, you have my full attention.
But like, you know, she knows me that well.
And she knows, she makes decisions that I would make. If she can't reach me and there's something that is absolutely dire that needs to have an answer, she will answer as I would. But you know, that took a long time. So I think putting a team in place allows you to have a little bit of freedom in terms of having, I do. I mean, it's crazy. I have like three jobs. That's, and not including being a mom, which is, you know, the most important of it all. So, and a wife, you know, so you have to surround yourself with people. And when I'm at the bakery and working, you know, 18-hour days, and I can only check in a few times, I know that I have a support team here. not only my husband, but, you know, with people that we work with. So it, like a nanny and, you know, you just have to, you make it work. And I know that I'm setting the best example for my children because I want my daughter to be a kick-ass entrepreneur as well.
That's awesome.
And my son, too.
And him, too. I guess we want him
to be successful as well. But the future is
female. Yeah, absolutely. Well, no, and it's good that you know that you can't do it all by yourself. And that's one of the powers of being an entrepreneur is knowing where you're strong, knowing where you're weak, and delegating accordingly, which it sounds like you do so beautifully.
But it's not a natural thing to know how to delegate. I remember when we started just as a bakery and then kind of went to sandwiches and soups. And the first time we were doing sandwiches, I insisted upon making every sandwich myself. I know that that is not a good use of my time. And also that I can't do it as well as they can. So, you know, just giving that up for the first time, it's always a bit scary, but you have to realize that you have to empower your team.
Absolutely. Always worth it. But we're going to take a quick break. But when we come back, we're going to talk about more about building Bird Bakery. We are the biggest entrepreneur platform on the planet. This is Business Rockstars.
Head to Court Furniture Clearance Center for up to 70% off new retail prices. You never know what kind of court-certified treasures you'll find. And the best part? It's court bonus rewards time. Earn bonus rewards in our clearance centers from April 4th through April 30th, 2019. Get $25 in bonus rewards on every $250 spent after all discounts and before taxes applied. Court bonus rewards aren't transferable, can't be exchanged for actual cash, and are not valid with any other offers, discounts, or special buys. Redeem your court bonus rewards May 1st through May 10th, 2019. Go to courtclearancefurniture.com today.
Hey, cybercriminals stole the W-2 forms from my friend's company.
Yeah, scammers impersonate CEOs in email and also launch attacks from compromised accounts.
What if they target us?
Don't worry. We have Barracuda Total Email Protection.
So we're secured?
Yes. Barracuda protects businesses of all sizes with artificial intelligence that blocks spear phishing, account takeover attempts, and business email compromise.
That's a relief.
Protect your business at Barracuda.com. Barracuda. Your journey secured.
Welcome back to Business Rockstars, where I am chatting with the owner and CEO of Bird Bakery. Now, you touched on starting the bakery before, but let's get into some of those juicy details about how your grandmother was inspiration, if you could start there.
Absolutely. So my grandmother had a really successful catering company in San Antonio. And after she passed away, people would call my mom and just, they were always asking for her recipes. They wanted to know her torta recipe, her lemon curd, because she was sort of just this establishment in the city. And I realized that if we open in San Antonio, because people always wonder why San Antonio. I was born there, but that's where her company was. So that I knew if we opened in San Antonio with her recipes, we would at least have like a couple hundred customers. I couldn't guarantee the rest, but I knew at least her customers and their children and their grandchildren would come. So that's what we did. And a lot of them are my grandmother's recipes. A lot of them are my mom's recipes. A lot of them are just, the cookies are all my recipes that I've developed. I've been an avid baker since for as long as I can remember. I always say in television, I would maybe like go in, kind of have a good meeting, bake, go home, bake cookies, send them, and then I would get the job. So
it's probably awesome. Like, it was your good luck charm.
Exactly.
I wish that was my good luck charm because I love dessert. At what point did you decide that it was a good next step to open up in Dallas as well?
So we had been approached by so many people about opening in Houston and Northern San Antonio. And I can honestly say we probably turned down 500 opportunities. You know, amazing developments. It seemed like a good fit, very similar demographic to the success that we've had in San Antonio. And I just didn't feel like the time was right. Dallas, the owner of Highland Park Village, which is the most prestigious shopping center and actually the first outdoor shopping center in North America, came to us and he said, you know, we'd really love to have a Bird Bakery here. And then they were really persistent. He said, I've been approached by women in the parking lot every day. If I do not have a Bird Bakery here, my wife will not talk to me. And he just, you know, he was so, so adamant about it. And for us, I knew I'd be 9 months pregnant when we opened. I was on my feet. Like I knew I'd have to be on my feet 22 hours a day, pulling all nighters, 8.5 months pregnant. And to me, the timing didn't work out. So I just kept saying, no, this isn't going to work out. This isn't going to happen. And, that was great negotiating power. we ended up coming to a deal. We did an 8-week build out and we opened right before Thanksgiving of last year. And we couldn't ask. It's so amazing because we have so many of our wonderful customers from Dallas who have family in San Antonio and vice versa. So we see a lot of our customers back and forth. And then it just has been a really natural and organic progression. And it was the logical next step. And it's thank goodness it's been a wonderful thing for everyone.
Yeah, it's so cool. When I hear you talk about your story, it's so apparent that you're a business with so much heart, that
thank
it started, you know, as a family inspiration,
yes.
and your recipes still to this day come from your family. Very, yeah. very cool.
Thank you.
So obviously when you're starting a business and then expanding mm-hmm. as you have to Dallas, it takes capital. And that's one of those things that a lot of entrepreneurs get stuck on. So how did you fund your business?
So basically what we did is, I mean, our San Antonio overhead was a lot less than our Dallas just because of rent and because of, I mean, food costs. And so we had been we'd been in the black for a long time by the time we opened up our second location. I mean, San Antonio, our startup cost was honestly about a tenth of what it was in Dallas. So we had saved a lot of money. We had saved enough where we could do our build out. We could hire architect. We could have like at least 4 months rent and payroll. But for other people, and actually I thought we were going to have to go this route. At one point we had a small business loan from Chase, which was great because it really was like, again, a really organic situation. They were right next door. They saw how successful we were. The bankers came to us every day for lunch. And it was just this kind of like logical next step. So we had that as a cushion. But really, I mean, just saving our money and using it wisely. There are times when you feel like things are going really well. And my advice, I made mistakes where I'm like, okay, let's go buy a delivery vehicle. Just pay cash. Just go pay cash. And like, I look back and I'm like, I could have had even more startup capital for Dallas. Why did I feel like I needed to pay? Just because we had that money in the bank. And it was like some of those little early on mistakes that I would do differently this time, obviously, just make a car payment like a normal person, just, you know, and things
yeah.
like that. So
hindsight is 2020.
It is 2020, yeah. but just because you know, do have capital at the time, save
mean
that
it needs
because
to be spent.
Exactly.
It can be saved
you don't
for something
know, yes.
bigger down the line.
Exactly. You have to always have that bigger picture in mind.
Yeah. But to your point, you're a cash flow business,
mm-hmm.
so it allowed you to
exactly.
self-fund
yes.
along the way.
Exactly, yes. Thankfully.
Yeah, that's great.
Mm-hmm.
So do you have any business partners or has it really just been a one-woman show until, of course, hiring an amazing team?
Of course. No, so basically when we opened, it was a decision I told my husband. I said, I really want to do this. And our business manager was like, this is a horrible idea. Why does everybody in the entertainment business feel like they need to go in the restaurant business? Please do not do this. And I was like, no, this is different. It's not like we're just, you know, funding. It's just, this is something that is part of who I am and it will be a success. So my dad lives in San Antonio and he took a small, I think 2%, just so he could come and check things out when I'm not there. He goes to the bakery 3 times a day and just checks on things. So, you know, I mean, it really, to be honest, has been starting the company was definitely a one-man show, but continuing it has not been. My mom, my sister, my mom provided like so many of her recipes, like our pimento cheese, our chicken salad that we had growing up and we've enjoyed all summer long. All my mom's recipes, you know, she
yeah.
shared those with me. My sister is an amazing French trained chef. She's come and worked with my staff and given us her recipes. So, I mean, it's never really a one woman show.
It's so true because support is so necessary and support can take forms in so many different
exactly.
ways, not just financial
yes.
or even not even just labor. Sometimes it's emotional or
exactly.
or giving recipes in your case.
Exactly.
So very cool that
mm-hmm.
you have a lot of supportive people
it's
behind
true.
You. And
yeah.
speaking of that, you've built an incredible team. So let's talk about that.
Yes.
What do you look for when you're hiring someone?
So I look for we always say, is she bird? How bird-like are they? you know, but somebody who cares and understands that this is not just a job. I want people, I mean, we're on this planet for such a finite period of time. And I want them to feel fulfilled when they come to work. I want them to feel like this is their bird family. And to be honest, it was a lot easier in San Antonio because they grew organically with us, as opposed to opening our second location where you literally have to hire everybody at once. And a lot of times, especially if you have a small hiring window, it's a paycheck. And so that has been the biggest challenge is finding people that have a heart for the company, finding people who know what you've gone through to build it and make it what it is today and who respect your values. I mean, it's people who won't cut corners in the kitchen. Yes, it's easier to buy lemon juice in a bottle, but guess what? Our lemon squares are what they are because we freshly squeeze our Meyer lemons every day. So, you know, finding that kitchen manager that's not going to say, can't we just order this from Sysco? No. There's a reason we have a lemon squeezer and there's a reason that people love our lemon squares.
Mm-hmm.
So people are always going to want to cut corners. But I think if they truly understand the heart behind the company and the reason why you do the things you do and the reason why those things have worked, it makes a huge difference.
Yeah, and taking pride in your work and really the art of baking, ultimately.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
So you said they have to be bird-like. So, so tell me what that means.
So somebody who is engaging and warm. I tell my staff, when somebody walks through these doors, it's like they're coming into your home. You would never have somebody come into your home and ignore them. Welcome them to your home. And again, like I tell my staff this every day, I'm like, you don't ever know what kind of a day someone's having when they walk through those doors. They come to the bakery to treat themselves and to treat themselves well. We need to treat our guests as if they are the most important people in the world because people have so much going on in their life. And I want it to be a sanctuary where people can come, obviously, like, have cupcakes and sandwiches and a lovely lunch, but also just feel welcomed and loved.
Well, we're going to end on a fun and light note. And that is, if you were not the owner of a bakery, what hat would you want to be wearing?
I think I would probably want to be a morning host on the Today Show.
Instead, you go into their kitchen to interact with the host and make baked goods. So basically, you get the best of both worlds.
Totally. That's true. That's true. No complaints.
So fun. Well, thank you so much for stopping by during your busy schedule. So fun learning about your amazing journey.
Okay. I'll send some cookies your way.
Please do. We are the biggest entrepreneur platform on the planet. This is Business Rockstars.
You shouldn't have to choose a random lawyer who charges expensive hourly rates when you need legal help. But the legal system is so complicated, what other choice do you have when you need help with your business or want to protect your family? Start with LegalZoom. They make it easy. For more than a decade, they've provided a way for regular people like you and me to confidently navigate the legal system. LegalZoom's not a law firm, and that's how they provide such great value. They don't rely on charging you by the hour. Instead, you'll get transparent pricing and customer reviews so you know exactly what you're getting up front. If you need help with incorporation, LLCs, trademarks, last wills, living trusts, and more, LegalZoom's the smart choice. They've got the right people on hand to answer your questions. And if you need legal advice, their network of independent attorneys can provide the straightforward guidance you need in most states. Don't let legal hurdles become an excuse. Go to LegalZoom.com today to start building your own future the right way. To save even more, enter ROCKSTAR in the referral box at checkout. That's LegalZoom.com.
Welcome back to Business Rockstars. Now let's go to Mark Lack.
We're here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. I'm Mark Lack, and this is Business Rockstars. My guest today is Felina Hansen. You're the founder of Hera Hub, which is basically an incubator and a business space where you guys not only help fund people, but you also give them office space. You're also the author of Flight Club, a book that's basically about how to launch your dream business. Yeah. More on that in a little bit. For now, I want to know, what is it like? Somebody comes into your office, they rent some office space, and you guys even have an opportunity to provide them funding if they need it?
Yeah, so we have a business accelerator program called Hera Labs and a funding arm called Hera Angels. And that's spearheaded by a woman by the name of Dr. Sylvia Ma. And her background is in the world of science, molecular biology, technology transfer. She is a rock star herself. She's amazing. And she really helps women both at the early stage of ideation and also growth stage through 12-week accelerator programs. She's also an angel investor. And so she was my angel investor in Hera Hub and helping us get to that point where we could license the business model, create something we could duplicate. And she also is teaching other women how to become angel investors. Right now, under 20% of folks in the angel world are women. And in the VC world, it's closer to about 4%. So we're trying to inspire more women to invest in female founders.
So obviously, you guys have figured out the secret sauce to scaling, at least in your business industry.
Yes.
So what is that? What is allowing you guys to be able to scale what's not easy to do? You have, you know, an incubator, an accelerator, and basically you're renting out real estate where people can come in and they can get office space.
Yeah.
So some people have that one thing. You guys are adding multiple facets into that same business model, and then you're scaling it. So what's making you guys successful? How do you scale that?
It's really very much understanding our customer. We're constantly listening to our members. Here in Southern California, we have close to 400 female entrepreneurs in our community, and we're just listening all the time. What do they need to support their growth, their expansion, their idea, how do they get it to market? And so we just consistently keep adding programming and resources for our customers.
So what's been the key to the scaling? Obviously, listening to customers helps, but you could listen to the customers, but have no idea how to grow the business from what the customers are telling you. So what has been the business side of the thing that's allowing you to be able to grow?
It's marketing and operations. So I'm a marketing girl. That comes natural to me. But from day one in building this business, much different than my prior business, it was really paying attention to the details of the operations, creating systems and models that could be replicated. That's why I built 3 locations in the first 2 years of business, because I wanted to build it and break it and do it over again so I could make sure I had the right formula so someone else could go implement that through a license model.
How do you pick where to get the location? Because I feel like that's probably got a lot to do with it.
It does, absolutely.
Where you pick your location.
Yep.
And so how do you guys go about picking the right locations for what your business is all about?
Yeah, so we look at cities that are sizable, at least to 500,000, and then we look at particular real estate options within that city based on our demographics. So we're not the cool, hip, downtown tech space, co-working space. We typically are closer to where our members live, kind of on the edge of the city, so to speak, and we look for particular space. There's a lot that goes into that. You're absolutely right.
What's the hardest part about having a business model that's licensed out and a model where you're now starting to expand? You're going to have 5 locations, and I know you're already talking about going international with this. What's the hardest part about scaling out this type of a business?
Culture. It is more challenging than I would have imagined. So you can create all the systems and processes that are bulletproof, but getting that cultural piece right, the professionalism we bring, but also the business model is fun. And so how do you infuse fun into a business and almost, I hate to use the word mandate it, but, you know, create that opportunity for, actually, it was our Swedish licensing candidate that said it best. She called it joyful professionalism. So that's really very intangible. And how do you convey that to somebody all the way across the United States or even potentially across the world?
So I think you just asked the question and I'm going to flip it back on you to answer.
Sure.
How do you create the consistency in the great company culture across as you're scaling?
Yeah, modeling it the best that we can and just being part of those conversations.
Systematizing it as well.
Yeah, but demonstrating it really and just being continued. I was just out in Washington, D.C. last week working with our licensee out there, being a part of that community.
Felina Hansen is my guest. I'm Mark Lack on Business Rockstars. We're here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. Let's talk about your book real quick.
Perfect.
Flight Club. It's basically about, as it says here, how to launch your dream business. Tell me a little bit more about the book. What happens? I read this. What do I walk away with?
So the book was written for a woman who aspires to be an entrepreneur. She probably hasn't taken that step yet. She's thinking about, as we call it, leaning out and wants to start a business but might be afraid. So the first part of the book is a bit of my story and journey as an entrepreneur, the ups, the downs, the reinvention. It's other women who have contributed their thoughts and ideas and exercises to help that woman decide what's the dream business that they will launch. And then the third part of the book is an online platform that I built called Steps to Startup. I've met over 1,000 entrepreneurs over the last 5 years who get into launching a business and they haven't done some of the critical pieces of getting the foundation right. And that's what's detailed in the book.
Give me something from the book that if I were to have read the whole thing would be the most shocking to learn about you.
Shocking. You know, I think it really
could
comes
be the most
down,
impressive thing, well, most shocking.
It comes down to that reinvention piece. I really, really believe that. I'm pretty candid in the book about what's happened in my life through divorce and all kinds of different things, only to make the point, and you made the point earlier, we've all been through something in our lives. We've all been beaten up, punched in the face, so to speak. It's how you recover from that and what you do with that information that defines who you are.
What's one of your favorite stories? You said other people have contributed to content. So out of this book, I know that it's hard for you to probably pick any of them because I'm sure you spent so many sleepless nights being very clear about which ones were going to qualify for the book. So I'm sure they're all your favorite in their own way. But if you had to pick one, share one with us.
Yeah, one of the contributors is a woman named Linda O'Keefe, and she writes a segment. She has a psychology background and she writes a segment about mindset. And that is such a critical factor as an entrepreneur. It really, a lot of times, is about mindset. You can have the best idea in the world, but if your head's not in the right place, you're not going to succeed. And so that's a big piece of the book is really how do you position yourself and not only around your community, but get your head in the game, knowing that it's going to be tough and you're going to have to pick yourself up and keep going.
It reminds me of the old statistic, which is 80% of success is psychology, 20% is the mechanics or the strategies and the tactics and the how-to.
Yeah.
And so you obviously align with that, as do I. Psychology and mindset is definitely what trumps the strategies and the mechanics and the resources, anything like that. So I'm curious from you, you know, obviously you shared one of your stories already with us, you know, from a place where you had, you know, that deep place in your life where you were hit with a fire truck, for a lack of any better way to explain it than that. So I'm curious, what are some tips that you have for people when it comes to the mind? You've obviously had an experience where you were able to triumph and overcome that and now move on to bigger, greater, successful things rather than playing the story of being a victim. Yep. And so what are some tricks that you have for the mindset part of things? Because at the end of the day, it is kind of like mind hacks, mind tricks, whatever you want to call it. Yep. What are some tips you have?
Yeah, so vision is a big piece of it and being extremely clear. Again, 20,000 women by 2020.
So creating a vision or creating visualizing things?
Both. Good point. Yeah, absolutely. So creating a vision that you can see and that's tangible, that's visual to you, and what the success and what that outcome looks like. But what I call it is, you know, your mission or your vision statement, but I call it a mantra. Knowing exactly what you're doing. I meet a lot of entrepreneurs that are kind of going like this and they don't really know what the end point is. And so really clearly articulating exactly what you're going to do and then figuring out how to get there. The other piece of it as well is really that determination piece. Again, you're gonna get beat up as an entrepreneur. And I see a lot of people, they get to the 11th hour and they give up and they pull out. Or even worse, I see a lot of entrepreneurs with what I call shiny object syndrome, where they get into business and then they see something shiny over here and they start to try to go in too many directions at the same time.
This thing that they've been working on for 6 months or a year or 3 years hasn't succeeded or worked out or paid off the way they thought it would. And as a result, they hear about a new opportunity or a new trend or a new thing, and they want to leave what they've already compounded so much time and energy and money on to go over the new shiny thing.
Exactly. Every 6 months, I see folks do it all the time. And it's pervasive in the culture, right? It's get rich quick, it's take a pill and get skinny kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, or create an app and sell it for $1 billion in
a
year.
Yes, of course. Everyone's trying to be that next business. But business is difficult. And you have to know going into it that you have to expect the unexpected. Things are going to come up daily. You are going to get beat up. And I say to a lot of people, if you're not ready for that, then maybe entrepreneurship isn't the path for you, to be honest.
And so I think that's right on the point, and that's perfect. I think entrepreneurship is not right for a lot of people. Yeah. But so we've got a bunch of aspiring entrepreneurs with us right now, and they're wondering, when is it right for me? Yeah. I have a 9-to-5 job. It's what pays my bills, but I'm just really not fulfilled or happy or passionate. And I've got this vision for what could be, but I just either don't have the mindset, the resources, the confidence, the connections, whatever it is, whatever their limiting beliefs or excuses or rationale they're telling themselves is, what's our advice for them? How do they cut the cord from their 9-to-5 job, their only source of income that pays their bills, maybe even supports their family? How do they cut the cord? When do they know is the right time to make that leap and to start their business or turn their idea into a business?
Yep. So one thing we always recommend is side launching. Launch a business while you still have your day job.
Smart. Don't just cut the cord.
Don't just cut the cord. Exactly. Obviously, save up money. That's a no-brainer. But I do see a lot of entrepreneurs that leap. And I'm a big fan of leaping, taking flight, whatever
Build the plane on the way down.
Exactly, as you fly it. But really, truly, launch that business. Take a year, however long you need to take. There are 24 hours in a day. I understand we have a lot of commitments. But really do your best to build a foundation before you take that leap and find community. Find other people who are doing it. The biggest mistake I see entrepreneurs make is they'll come to me or somebody in my community and say, I have an idea, but I don't want to say it because I'm afraid somebody's going to steal my idea. People are too busy to steal your idea.
I love when I hear that.
Right? Exactly.
Felina Hansen, author of Flight Club. It's been a pleasure to have you on the show.
Likewise. Thanks.
Thank you. I'm Mark Lack on Business Rockstars, connecting a community of entrepreneurs. Join us on Facebook, Twitter, and online at businessrockstars.com.
What do the best bosses do every day? I'm Pat O'Brien with the Business Rockstars Minute. Your company is only as good as the culture, and that starts with the boss. Here are some things the best bosses do every day to provide a happy workplace and make them wildly successful. One, they don't micromanage. Be an amazing boss by taking comfort in the fact you hired the right employees with the right talents and qualifications. Two, they reinforce good work. It's a simple concept. If you boost morale, you boost productivity right there in the workplace. Three, they listen. Here's a trick. Say, tell me more, to show you're actually listening or when giving feedback. Cultivating respect in the workplace doesn't happen all at once. It's about a series of daily habits that mesh creativity and leadership. It also instills trust in them as well. I'm Pat O'Brien, and this has been a Business Rockstars Minute.
Message and data rates may apply.
Earning your degree from one of the top business schools in the country might sound impossible to fit into your workload. But what if there were a business degree that furthered your career and gave you access to world-renowned faculty, leaders, and mentors, all on your schedule? One that opened doors to some of the most influential CEOs, tech companies, law firms, entrepreneurs, and thought leaders. And what if you could earn that degree in as little as 16 months, 100% online? To find out more, text NET to 79645. That's NET to 79645. Start your online MBA, Information Management, or Business Analytics Master's program from the W.P. Carey School of Business at Arizona State University today. Learn more about the W.P. Carey Business Graduate Programs online. Text NET to 79645. That's NET to 79645.
Hi, this is Fred Dreyer, former Rams defensive end. Football season just ended, and you can bet teams are already hard at work scouting new talent for next season. But if you're running a small business, you need to know where to go to find top recruits. LinkedIn, it's where people go every day to make connections, grow in their careers, and discover new job opportunities. LinkedIn Jobs takes the time to learn more about who you're looking for and then recommends the qualified candidates you want to spend time talking to make a quality hire you're excited about. Customers rate LinkedIn Jobs number one in delivering quality hires, and posting your job on LinkedIn gives you the best chance of finding and starting a conversation with your next star recruit. It's no surprise a new hire is made every 8 seconds using LinkedIn. So build your winning team by posting your job opportunity on LinkedIn and visit LinkedIn.com/solution. Get $50 off your first job post. That's LinkedIn.com/solution. Terms and conditions apply.
Welcome back to Business Rockstars. Now let's go to Mark Lack.
We're here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. I'm Mark Lack, and this is Business Rockstars. My guest today is Audrey Bellis. She is the founder of Startup DTLA, as well as the founder of Worthy Women. It's great to have you on the show.
Great to be here.
So we both know as entrepreneurs, right? The ups and the downs, the failures, the successes, the lessons learned from all of those. The biggest fear of all of us, deep down inside, is our fear of not being worthy. Right. And one of the things that I think holds people back from becoming an entrepreneur or from really living the life that they're capable of, their full potential, and having the quality of life and the abundance in their life that we're all capable of achieving. The thing that really holds us back, I think, is our fear of success. Because if we fail, which achieving success in anything, we're going to fail, meaning we're going to learn on our way. But the reason why we're afraid of failure is because if we fail, it means we're not worthy enough.
Right.
And so self-worth is something that I know both of us have struggled with at some point in our life. And when we finally gave ourselves the gift of knowing that we're worthy, no matter what, that was when it all changed for us. And we've both been on rocket ships to success and have our own businesses. And so I'm curious from your perspective, I know you have an amazing story about how you triumphed over the adversity of not feeling worthy and just kind of the adversity that comes along with the entrepreneurship. So take us to that point in your life, and you know which one I'm talking about when you had that challenge and you had that adversity, and how you triumphed over that, because I think it's really incredible.
I actually had a broken engagement that left me 6 figures in debt. And the only way I was ever going to pay that off was by becoming an entrepreneur, not by getting a JOB, so I wouldn't be paying it off forever. And I had to really dig deep and find my self-worth for that, because I was embarrassed and ashamed at the amount of money that I owed, the situation that I had put myself in. And what did that mean for me as an entrepreneur? Am I worthy of going out and asking for people's business when I had gotten myself into such a predicament? Mm-hmm. And thankfully, that journey of discovering my self-worth really helped me to get to where I am today. And now I get to teach people how to find theirs.
So why do you think, I kind of touched on, in my own opinion, what I think it is, but why do you think most people struggle with self-worth? Why do you think most people beat themselves down? And the biggest person that's kind of putting them down in life is themselves. Right. And then it's a reflection of how they see the world. Why do you think most people do that to themselves? Why do you think most people don't feel worthy?
I think most people don't feel worthy because they've internalized beliefs about what they think actually brings value to them and determines how worthy they are. And oftentimes what happens is people put that outwardly and think, if I have this, then I will be worthy. When I have this job, when I have this boyfriend, when I close this deal, I will be worthy of love and belonging. I will be seen in the world. Mm. And the reality is you are worthy as is. No one else can assign your worth, only you can. Yet too often people put that outside and assume that other people will assign that to them when they can't.
I love that. I think that's so true. And I'm always curious to know, when did you give yourself the gift of knowing that you're worthy? Because that's a tipping point in all of our lives, that if we do get to that place where we give ourselves the gift, because that's really what you're doing. Only right. You can give it to yourself. You were just saying, right, but we try to reach out. We try to get other people. If this happens, yes. Then I'll give it to me. But when did it happen for you? When did you give yourself the gift of feeling worthy?
It actually happened to me last year, and it wasn't something I found for myself. Somebody else illuminated that for me. Mm. I have a good friend of mine that I've known for many years, who's known me since high school, saw me through all this experience, right, of falling down and rebuilding. And she pointed out to me, she said, Audrey, you've been working really hard for a long time. When are you going to stop fighting and realize you're over the hump? You're already there. When are you just going to learn to actually enjoy what you have? Why does it have to always be so hard? And I took a look around me and I did some moral inventory and I said, you're right. It doesn't have to be this hard. I'm fighting for things because I've been stuck in this fight mode for so long that I don't have to fight for anymore. And that's when I really started giving myself permission to live in this place of, okay, I've got this. I'm good.
Give it up for the good friends, right?
Yes.
Audrey Bellis is my guest right now. She's the founder of Startup DTLA as well as the founder of Worthy Women. I'm Mark Lack on Business Rockstars. We're here to inspire, inform, and connect a community of entrepreneurs. Again, Audrey Bellis is joining me right now, and we're talking about feeling worthy. Yep. And it's something that maybe some people are kind of like, I'm a man, I feel worthy. But deep down inside of us, I think the reason why most of us don't fulfill our potential in life is because we're afraid that if we reach for it and we don't get it, we aren't worthy.
Right.
And I think most people would rather settle for a life of comfort and security than to reach for their deepest, biggest dreams and not achieve them. Because if you don't, and you reach for your dreams and you don't achieve them, you're a failure.
Right.
And you're not worthy. And that's some real stuff right there. So what do you think is the key to recognizing that no matter what, you are worthy in life so that people can give it to themselves, because that's all that you can have?
So I like to use the line, the relationship that I have with you is a direct reflection of the relationship that I have with myself.
Powerful.
And what is the relationship that I have with myself? How do I show up at work? How do I show up in my life? You touched on this idea of people are too scared to go out and get it. And so they play small and they live small. And we look at that and we say, oh man, you're just staying there in the comfort zone. The reality is that comfort zone eats them alive. It's the one thing that sends people into midlife crisis or whatever crisis that they're having. It makes them drink too much. It makes them fight too much with their partners. Mm. It makes the reasons why they cheat, lie, steal, control, manipulate. It doesn't not show up in their lives. It shows up every way and tortures them daily. One of the things about self-mastery is you're never going to achieve perfection.
What you recognize on the journey. And that's when you realize I'm already perfect to begin with.
Absolutely. And I think the biggest key to that is acceptance. You are enough as is, not when you are enough now.
Yeah.
Not despite your imperfections, but because of them.
I love that. Audrey, you're amazing. I think this segment's really heartfelt and touching because I'm sure it's going to move a lot of people in a different way than some of our other segments. So I appreciate you for opening up, sharing your story with us.
Thank you for having me.
I'm Mark Lack on Business Rockstars, connecting a community of entrepreneurs. Join us on Facebook, Twitter, and online at businessrockstars.com.
This information is given with the understanding that neither the host nor the station is engaged in rendering legal, accounting, business, or other professional advice. Since the details of your situation are unique, you should additionally seek the advice and services of a competent professional.